This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. Orang Asli communities and their rights have often gotten short shrift from authorities and the public. But there are many, both in the public and private spheres, working to bring more attention to Orang Asli stories and issues. Today on the show, we're speaking to S.C. Shekar, a freelance photojournalist who has spent a lot of time documenting Orang Asli communities around Malaysia, including in Bandar Muazzam Shah, Pahang. Welcome to the show, Shekar.
Thank you for having me.
Now, your work with the Orang Asli in Pahang was featured in the Malay Mail News Portal and the Malaysian Insight Portal not too long ago, and it's generated a significant amount of interest in the Orang Asli community in Pahang. Could you maybe start by telling how you embarked on this particular project there?
Right. About a year ago, I started a project documenting our rivers in the country. It's for a book that I'm doing. It's called The Rivers of Malaysia. And one of the areas that I went to was Muazzam Shah, because I was told that that area used to have many rivers. And unfortunately, there's very little rainfall in that area. So I was quite curious, and I actually went there. And when I did, I stumbled upon this landfill, and where there were some 30, 40 families living right around the periphery of this landfill. And when I saw that, I was quite surprised, you know. And what was shocking was seeing children as young as a year and a half, toddlers, you know, running around in the garbage tip. And that was quite shocking. You know, I've been a journalist for so many years, and I've seen things like this happen in the Philippines, in Indonesia, in India, but never, ever did I ever think that this I would see this in this country, you know.
Could you describe the scene for us, Shekar? I have never been to a landfill, so I'm not quite sure what to imagine when you say that you see children foraging among this giant pile of garbage. I mean, what does it look like?
Well, it's basically a land that's been cleared with a large hole dug so that garbage can be poured in. So this is household garbage, it's garden waste, everything that we generate is actually brought in these Alam Flora trucks, and it's dumped into this this big pit. Now, this pit is then covered, and then another pit dug, and then it goes on. So this landfill begins to grow. Now, once this landfill is full, they start piling rubbish on top of the original site, and then it begins to become a mountain of garbage. So you can imagine the smell, the stench that's generated from rotting garbage. So I was really, really upset seeing these children. These children are a year and a half. There's so many families, and I've been there with them for almost a year now. And I know them personally. I know their names. I know their several twins, and they all work together. So, and they do live on the landfill, contrary to what Jakwa was saying. They do live within 2 minutes walking distance, the nearest village, and maybe 5 or 10 minutes to the furthest village, but all within the compound of the landfill.
We're going to get into the kind of reactions that your coverage and your photos have sort of generated. But, you know, talk to us about the Orang Asli people that you've met, that you know personally. You mentioned there are 30 to 40 families living around the periphery of that landfill. Are they from the same tribes? Are they family members? What is their living situation like?
Well, I think these Orang Asli at the landfill are not originally from there. They come from neighboring counties, you can call it that. There's one in a group that came from Tasik Chini, in that area. So quite a few different areas. They all came here because there was money to be made in recycling. So it started about 10 years ago. In fact, I saw a blog posting by this gentleman called Suhaimi Said. And he had this blog posting 10 years ago of this very same village, with photographs of these people living on the landfill. And I saw them there. I've realized that these people have been there for quite a while. When I asked them how long, they said, oh, he's been here for 5 years. He's just arrived. So everyone came here just to make money.
I see. So they see it as like a cash.
Exactly.
They can find cash here.
Right.
What are they collecting from the landfill? Is it recyclables like you mentioned, or are they scavenging for other matter as well?
Right. Now, there's several things that go on in this recycling, in this garbage tip. One of it is there are lots of tin cans, aluminum cans, lots of plastics that can be recycled and some that can't. There are lots of clothes and lots of toys. People throw away toys. There's so many things that people are throwing away that these people, the Orang Asli, find that can be reused. So there is a small industry going on there. They collect these things, they wash it, and then they sell it. You know, that sort of thing has been going on. And then there's also food that people throw away. Now, for instance, I've seen packets of milk unopened, right, which have expired. And these supermarkets or stores, they come and dump it. When it's dumped there, it still looks like it's new, all right, but it's expired. And these, I've seen children actually take this and drink it. All right, so I've seen milk that's split. And people and these children are still drinking it. They don't know any better. So, you know, there's a lot of ignorance. There's so many health issues. There's one child in another landfill, I was told of this recently, who had contracted elephantitis. This was in Sagamat.
Could you kind of explain what elephantitis
is?
Well,
it's where your legs swell up to the size of an elephant, I suppose. And it's a bacterial infection. So, and these things happen. I've been there so many times when I've seen children cut themselves on rusty tin cans and glass. And I have pictures of all of this. You know, I wish your viewers, your listeners could actually see the pictures, but, you know, it's difficult.
How do the Orang Asli tribes who live off this landfill, how do they view their situation? Do they see themselves as doing honest day's work, for example? Or is this something that they feel that they've been pushed to do because of lack of opportunities or lack of their original source of economic support?
Well, I don't think this particular group was forced to do anything, no. I think they went there on their own will because obviously whatever else they were doing, wherever they were in the past, wasn't as lucrative as doing this work in the landfill. I think they are so resigned to the fact that, you know, this is my lot in life and that's all, you know. And you can't really blame them because of what's been happening. Look at what's happening in Uluguruntum in Gopeng, where the Orang Asli settlement there is affected by this hydroelectric plant that they are building on the river. And then also in the Hulangat forest now, where the government wants to degazette this area.
Losing their lands
exactly,
bit by
so,
bit.
No, I don't think, I think there's a big trust issue here. The Orang Asli don't trust the government. They don't trust us anymore. And that's very sad. These were the people who were the custodians of our rainforests, the rivers. How could we treat them this way?
I'm speaking to S.C. Shekar, a freelance photojournalist who has been documenting the Orang Asli communities in Bandar Muazzam Shah, Pahang. We'll be back with more of this discussion after these messages. Stay with us, BFM 89.9. Good morning. If you've just joined us, you're listening to Pressing Matters, and I'm speaking to S.C. Shekar, a freelance photojournalist who has been documenting the Orang Asli communities in Bandar Muazzam Shah in Pahang. So Shekar, as mentioned earlier, your photographs and sort of the stories that you've been following, they were published in the Malay Mail and the Malaysian Insight portals not too long ago. The reaction to it has been both of disbelief from perhaps the public who are seeing these pictures for the first time, But there were also denials coming out from authorities and even from some community members themselves saying that what's being reported isn't true. So what's going on here in that case?
Well, I expected this to sort of happen that way. I think the problem with the Orang Asli community doing this kind of work was nobody expected this. Nobody expected to see these pictures. And so it was a shock. It was a great shock for especially us urbanites who live in the city. We don't see any of these things. But then there was also the Jakua people from the Orang Asli affairs. In fact, 2 weeks before these pictures were published, I had sent out a letter of appeal to some friends to see if they could aid, help, you know, financially some of these children by, you know, we can buy provisions for the families. And of course, this letter found its way to the minister, and the minister then informed Jakua, and then Jakua, I get a call from Jakua one morning, and they're saying, can you tell us where this landfill is? Then I said, yeah, sure, you know, this is where it is, and this is what they're doing, and they really need a lot of help. But I also mentioned to them, please don't chase them out. You have to find a solution to their problems, which really is about finding a space for the children while the adults work. If the adults have to work there and they're earning money to support their families, then that's fine. You know, teach them how to do this kind of hazardous work, and then also find an alternative location for the children. Somehow maybe the children can be put in a daycare, something, you know, even if it's an old container truck that can be parked there where the children can be, or something can be done, you know. But of course, they said they'll get back to me, but no one ever did. So after 2 weeks of not hearing from them, and I had made one more trip there, to my shock and horror, the Orang Asli people in the village said, oh, Jakua came here the other day and asked us to move out. Then I said, okay, that's not good. Where are you going to go? What are you going to do? And you've been here for the last 10 years. How can you just get up and move? You know, it's not something that you can do.
Evicting them without an alternative is not a solution.
It's not an option, yeah, all right. And when I heard that, I was really very, very upset. I went back and I decided that, you know, these pictures have to be published. Malaysians need to see this. And also Malaysians need to know who's not doing their work.
Do you know what kind of engagement the community has with Jakua or other government authorities? I mean, it sounds like the government didn't even know they were there.
Exactly, because they wouldn't have asked me where this place was if they had known. And obviously, it's quite obvious that no one's really taking making any effort to reach out to these communities, or at least to listen to what it is they need, what is it they want. I mean, they wouldn't be here leaving their village, leaving their own areas, if they had things there to do. Most of the time, what happens is their land is being encroached upon, their rivers polluted, their waterways, they can't get water, they can't get food. And so they're left to, all right, let's go and see what else I can do. And that's how a lot of these communities ended up in the landfill. Why would you move from home if that home was good to you? You know?
So what has the response been from Jakua since this piece was published?
Well, the first thing they came up and said that this is all not true, and that the Orang Asli don't live in the landfill. But, you know, I've just shown you an aerial photograph detailing exactly where every single hamlet, house or village is from the landfill, and all within 2 minutes, a 1 minute walk from the actual dump site itself, all right? So, I don't think you can counter this in any way. You know, there are pictures and there are videos that I can show you where children are actually playing inside the landfill, you know?
I think one of the heartbreaking things about those photos is just how comfortable the children look in the landfill.
Well, you know,
it's normal.
They don't know anything else. You know, one of the things that we did was to take a few of these children to a river. These children have never seen a river in their lives. They've never seen a forest. These children have grown up, were born and grown up in that landfill.
Are any of these children going to schools nearby? Or does their life really center on this landfill?
I think a lot of these children don't go to school for two reasons. One is the infrequent transportation service that Jakoa was supposed to provide. They're supposed to send and pick up these kids five times a week to school and back. And there has been many cases, not just the landfill area. I think the people in the landfill don't go to school. There are other areas where they do go to school, and their complaint is the transportation that's supposed to pick the children up don't show up regularly. It was very if on and off. Well, that's one thing. Now, the main problem why these children don't go to school is because it's a very terrible thing, but they smell. They smell bad because they have no water to wash. Can you imagine this child's playing in the landfill? He just has to dry himself. There's no water to even wash. And then you go to school, and the kids are going to be ostracized when you go to school. No one's going to sit next to you, so you're going to be left behind. These are the social issues that people need to understand. It's not because they are dirty. They're not at all. I've lived with Orang Asli communities for so many years in the jungles where it's clean. They're the cleanest people. They don't have any demands of nature, and yet they live in such harmony with nature. So these people are now subject to this kind of life. It's very sad.
What do they do for water? There's no running water, as you mentioned in your...
They dig a little hole, all right? Maybe about 2 feet by 3 feet. And the hole can go down maybe about 3 or 4 feet. And then you hit some groundwater. That, again, depends on how low you are to the groundwater table. And then they try to get their water from there. But what happens is, in the past, they could do this. But now, because this landfill area is surrounded by oil palm plantations and rubber trees, there are lots of fertilizers and pesticides that have been pumped into the ground and that have now seeped into the water table. So all the water that they have access to is contaminated. What's worse is the landfill itself produces leachate that goes into the water table, and that's poisonous. So how can they get any water?
And following the publication of your photos and the project, Jakoa, as you mentioned, has issued a denial. And I think one of the recent developments was that they have actually closed off the landfill to the communities. Have you heard about what's happening to the communities
since
then?
Well, you know, it's very unfortunate. I just heard that the village next to the landfill that the government wanted to gazette has had someone else come in and made a counterclaim to that land. So now the Orang Asli there do not have a village to go back to.
And so what do they do now?
Well, I don't know. This is something that the state government has to do. You know, see, there's so many things that NGOs can do, that individuals like us can do. But at the end of the day, it's the state government and the federal government that have to sit down and find their land, give them back their land. You know, this is really sad. I mean, there's no secret that lots of these people have been robbed of their lands. It's no secret, you know. I mean, in many cases, in Uluguruntum, in Gopeng, ancestral graves were bulldozed to make a road. This is completely unacceptable. So, you know, how do we deal with these things? You know?
It's happening in plain sight, but we don't see it.
Yep.
There's just not enough.
And because now, thank God for social media, all right, we are able to see these things happening. You know, it's strange. In this particular landfill area, these villages have got no water, no electricity, but they have a full 4G network. So you can see these kids not going to school. Some of them have saved up some money from doing the recycling work, and they bought themselves phones. And that's what they do. I've got pictures of all this. they sit there on the landfill and they're playing video games on their phone.
The paradox of our times.
Yeah.
Shekhar, we don't have much time, but maybe you could talk to us about the kind of impact that you're hoping will come out of this project and, I suppose, coverage of this project. There's already been in social media a sort of overwhelming response of how can this be and this can't be right, and there's desire to take action. I guess what concrete things have you seen so far, and what are you hoping to see happen next?
Well, the reason why I did it was, well, the social part, the social awareness, that's so important. The Malaysians need to feel some empathy. And what I was really surprised with was foundations have come forward. Organizations have come forward. One of them is My Kase Foundation. They've come forward to help them with the provisions for these 22 families for the next couple of months till they get back on their feet. And then AirAsia Foundation and ECM Libra, they have expressed their interest to help these communities to build their homes. And that's something that's fascinating. I really hope that these foundations will carry on and maybe perhaps encourage other organizations to come and do some work as well with these Orang Asli communities. And one particular NGO, the World Global Peace Foundation, they have spent so many years in this area helping these Orang Asli communities. And this is, without their help, I think a lot of these Orang Asli communities still today would have no water and electricity. So they're doing a lot of work by providing water filtration systems as well as providing solar panels for these communities that are really isolated and yet so close to town. So that's the difficult part here.
Shekhar, thank you so much for speaking to me on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I've been speaking to freelance photojournalist S.C. Shekhar. This has been Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. Coming up next, we have the 10 a.m. news bulletin followed by Enterprise. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.